Welcome to On Purpose with Paul Peters. Today we're uncovering the passions, principles, and divine guidance that leads to a meaningful life. You're watching Now Media Television. Welcome to On Purpose with Paul. I am Paul, your amazing host, entrepreneur, visionary, owner of Covenant Case Management Services, and founder of the Nehemiah Project. I'm here to talk to you about how to discover your purpose. We're going to talk a little bit about a word that many of you may not be familiar with. It's called Ikigai. It's a Japanese philosophy, word philosophy, which can be roughly defined as a method of finding one's purpose and motivation in life. And it stems from the root word iki, I-K-I, meaning life, and gaia, G-A-I, meaning reason. Because of its unique approach, which is both idealistic and practical, personal and work-related, the ikigai concept and map is a useful tool for anyone seeking direction. It includes four spheres when approaching the question of what we should do with our lives, each sphere associated with a certain life focus or set of concerns. And they look at four areas. What do you love under the heading of love? What the world needs under the heading of virtue? What can you get paid for under the heading of security? And what you're good at, which is mastery. So we're going to take a look at each of these and ask ourselves, why is that important? And it's interesting, sometimes we have to take ourselves back to what it means to be a child. When we use our imagination and we could create things that don't exist. And really, that is what reality is about. Reality, when I shared with you before, the pen, it first was envisioned in somebody's mind. I had the opportunity yesterday, I was walking down a path and got to watch a young girl just exploring, brought me back to my childhood. You know, she's 8 years old and just having the best time. And time is one of those situations as a child, you just get into imagination. It's like, I'm in not a hurry. I mean, I want to enjoy. And she was exploring, doing all these wonderful things that we do as kids. And we've got to get back in touch with the things that we love most. And those things are going to be the driving force from a standpoint of career, success, abundance, wealth, whatever you want to call it. It's linked directly to what we're most passionate about. I have a chart up in front of you to help you understand. So Ikigai is made up of the four components. What you love. These are the things that you're passionate about. Sometimes they're the things that you could do without even getting paid. And so it's interesting, when I chose the career that I'm in, I did it for several reasons. I grew up in a very dysfunctional home. Many of you have heard my testimony. And I wanted to understand, why did I have to go through the things that I did go through? I went through a suicide attempt. I went through homelessness. I went through addiction. All of those things I went through because of choices that I had made. Did not have a good childhood growing up. Was bullied. I had a very wonderful, loving mother, but I did not have a father. I had a very abusive father. Many of you have heard that story before. And many of you have also gone through that similar situation. And those situations occurred in my life so that I would have one attribute, many attributes, but the one that stands out is compassion. Because I had lived that experience, I was able to have compassion for people who had been abused, who had been neglected, who were needy. And one of the things that ended up working out of that situation was working in the field that I currently work in. I own a company called Covenant Case Management Services. We work with folks with intellectual disabilities. We work with individuals with mental health issues and substance abuse issues. All of those were direct response from my search and understanding of why I had gone through the things that I had gone through. It ended up becoming a passion for me because I get so passionate about serving people who are underprivileged, who don't have a voice. And so often my passion, your passion, stems from an experience that you had in life. And so when we are doing something we love, it just, the sense of timing goes away, much like I shared with that young girl yesterday. We just want to do it because it's something we're passionate. What we try to do is take that love, the things we're passionate about, and apply it to a job, a vocation. So it's interesting, the next component on Ikigai, what you are good at. And so for me, I took that which I was passionate about, that which I loved, my desire to understand myself. I ended up going to school studying psychology.
I started working in the field, working in a group home where folks with intellectual disability have the compassion, the desire to do and do the things that many of us have done if they work in that field, serving folks with disabilities. And I ended up loving it. And I ended up becoming a career of doing it. I did it, been in the field for over 30 years, started my company in 2010. So I've been able to take that which I'm passionate at and the compassion that dwells within my value system, and then turn it into a career for me, where I started my company in 2010, and I've been very successful. We have quite a lot of clients in North Carolina. We're looking to branch out across the country. So I've taken what I've loved, I've taken what I'm good at, and you could look at it from a standpoint of the chart, passion, and then you do what the world needs. And so it's basically filling a need. And I shared with you before, this pen was created because there was a need to document or to write, put something down on paper. These glasses were created to help people who were beginning to suffer visually. And so when we can do something we love, and then we can then apply it to something we're good at and meet a need in society or the community, then we were beginning to work in understanding what it means to find our purpose and actually getting paid for it. So for me, what I have done, it's interesting, as I started my career and working in this field, I had other interests, other passions. And so I began to figure out, what can I do with my love of learning? And I love to teach, but I also recognize the things that I'm learning, I want to be able to share with other people, not only in the spoken, the way I'm doing it here, but in writing. So I used this pen, the one I shared with you before, and the computer, of course, is another invention that was created. And I began to write and document the things that I've learned, my own experiences. You know, I've shared with you before, our story is God's glory. God will use our story, our passion, our experiences, so that we can help other people. And that's what I've tried to do. So not only with the development of my company, the nonprofit I've created, the ability to write books and be able to have this TV show is expressing, living out my passion, meeting a need, because there's a deeper need within each and every one of us to find our purpose. Because when we find our purpose, and I've shared with you, there is a link to what we are called to do. When we are doing what we're called to do, it's going to impact our soul, our emotions, and we're going to be able to have better relationships because we're doing what we're called to do. We're in alignment with what we're created for. And so I have tried to apply that in my own life to do what I love, do what I'm good at, find a need. And in this situation, the world is full of people with disabilities. We, each and every one of us, has some level of form of disability. And so what I've tried to do with the areas that I'm working in regards to intellectual disability, I have a child with a disability, but also people who are struggling with mental health, and that could be reasons for that, substance abuse. And remember what I told you, I too struggled when I was younger with alcohol addiction. And so taking the things that I've experienced and helping other people. And the last component is doing what you love and getting paid for it. So when you're doing something you're absolutely passionate about, something that you're actually very good at, and something that you can get paid for, then, and also something that the world needs, you have the four components of the ikigai. And that's one of the ways we can begin to identify our purpose. Because like I said, purpose is something that is discovered. And when you begin to discover what you love, you begin to put that in the form of a skill that you can be mastery at. So understand, I'm going to use this as an example. So each of us, when we're born and we develop, part of our innate nature, whatever you want to call it, is we have a desire to walk. And so as a child, we get up, we fall down, we get up, we fall down, we get up, we fall down, until we master that. And then you take that to an even deeper level, because there's certain things that are put within us, a desire to do something that maybe someone else hasn't done or it doesn't want to do. And we begin to develop the mastery of that skill as we become and be trained by that. Often, I'm a big proponent of mentoring, and so that we learn from somebody who's already doing. You don't want to necessarily recreate the wheel. But you need to understand, and like I said, we've shared before in regards to, if you look at what you're doing each and every day, and you look at what brings you the most joy, that's an indication that's what you love and what you're most passionate about. Then you follow that passion to see, okay, is that something that I'm good at or want to be good at? Then you link yourself with somebody who can train you, teach you to be skilled at that level. And that's going to take discipline. It's going to take perseverance. Many of us watch the sports events. We just came off the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl and the NBA, when they have the finals, are the two best teams around. In order to be the best, you have to work hard. You have to be disciplined. You have to be good at your position, and you have to know how to work together. That is a beautiful picture of discovering your purpose. Because when you figure out what you love, you apply the knowledge, the skills to be good at that, even a master, even the best there is, a GOAT. And then you begin to unite with other people who are good at what they do. It's such a beautiful picture of a team approach to success. And ultimately, there's going to be one winner, the team that does better than the other. And so when we look at what we want to, you know, our purpose to be, and we begin to discover what we're passionate about, we discover what we're good at, and then we figure out how can I meet a need with the mastery level skill that I have and then get paid for it. When we begin to do that, we find that we have found the joy that we're looking for. And it's united with our purpose. It's united with our calling. And we begin to develop what I would call the creation of a legacy. And we see many people who have already done that. I think of Martin Luther King, who was passionate about the freedom and equality of the folks who were Black. We see it in Mother Teresa, in the impoverished. So it's out there. So go discover your ikigai, discover your purpose, and serve your community. Thank you so much.
Right back with more stories and insights to help you discover your calling and live with purpose. This is On Purpose with Paul Peters on Now Media Television. I'm Paul Peters, and you're watching On Purpose with Paul Peters on Now Media Television. Let's continue the journey towards your best life.
Welcome to On Purpose with Paul. I am Paul Peters, best-selling author, entrepreneur, founder of the Nehemiah Project, and your host. I'm here to talk to you about how do you discover your purpose. Purpose is something, I want to give you a quick definition. Purpose is the reason for which something is done, created, or which something exists. Now, when we think of purpose everywhere around us, even in this studio, I want to give you a couple quick examples. So I have a pen here. Everyone should know its purpose. We use it to write, to sign. It's filled with ink. This came because there was a need to document. And so the pen's purpose is to write, sometimes write a story. I've often used a pen to write my books, signing documents. Have another object here. It's a pair of glasses. I need these often as I've gotten older to be able to read. And so when we look around us, everything around us was created for a purpose. It was the reason for its existence. When we look in the mirror, the big question we ask is, what is my purpose? Why am I here? And we ask those questions because there's something deep within us. We really, truly believe that we were created for a purpose. But the purpose that we were created for isn't always easy. It's interesting. I use the term, success leaves clues. And when we were created for a special purpose. And the clues that are left are often what I often like to use as puzzle pieces. Those puzzle pieces are clues. And when you put the puzzle pieces together, they begin to form a picture, a clear picture. And what we're going to talk about today is some of those puzzle pieces to help you and me figure out, what am I called to do? What am I created to do? The other thing that's very interesting is when we look at why we were created, when we fall into what I would call alignment with our purpose, there's something that magical I would call that happens inside of us. It is something about our emotions. Relationships begin to fall into place. Our emotions, in a sense of peace, in a sense of love, those things are always come to us in regards to service. And so our purpose is linked to something that we're passionate about, something we love, and something we're called to serve one another. If we weren't called to serve one another, we wouldn't be all coexist in this lovely world. And each of us has a special uniqueness about us. I've often said that no two people, even identical twins, are alike. And so that should tell you there's something special about you. And the more you begin to understand yourself, the more you begin to understand what you're created to do and on the different passions and things that you're gifted at, it begins to unveil something that you're called to do. And so what we're going to be looking at is, how do we begin the discovery? Because finding your purpose is a discovery. So I don't have a shovel with me, but imagine that I have a shovel and we're going to go to work. We're going to start digging into the details, into the puzzle pieces of how we discover our purpose. So I'm going to start very simple. I'm going to have you do an exercise. And pretty much you can do this with a piece of paper. I will provide some documentation for you. I want you to do an activity list. An activity list is basically everything you do each and every day. You can separate it into personal and professional. And so what I want you to do is start taking notes of what you do each and every day. What time you get up? What do you do? So like for me, when I get up, one of the first things I do, I'm very passionate about this. I have my cup of coffee and I have it a special way. It's the way that I enjoy it. And so we each have certain things that we do each day. It may be linked to our profession. It just may be our personal preference. And document those things you do each and every day. And then what I want you to do is, as you go through that list and you begin to identify everything that you're doing, do it over a few days because you're going to see some things changing. For example, on the weekdays, you may do certain things versus on the weekend. And then what I want you to do, I want you to put it into four categories. Okay, and this may be fairly new to each of us, because what's going to happen is you're going to find the very activities that you do, much of them are done habitually, especially if you're a parent and you're raising your kids, and especially the age of the kids. But I want you to document on a sheet of paper. I will also provide a document with the information. So I want you to write down what is called the four zones. There is a zone of incompetence, and I will define these for you. The zone of incompetence are the things that you do that you're not very good at. So for me, zone of incompetence, thank God this does not happen to me very often, is changing a tire. I don't really like to do that. I'm not very skilled at it. I wouldn't say I'm completely incompetent, but it's definitely something I'm not the best at. Oil changes may be another example. So we have certain things that we're not very good at, but we have to do them, primarily because maybe we can't afford to pay somebody else to do it. The other zone I want you to write down is zone of competence. These are the things that we're competent and able to do, but we really don't want to do them, or we're not really passionate about doing them. Most of what we do probably falls into the zone of competence. And understand, our goal is to figure out what is our purpose. What are we called to do? And so then as you go through the list, you're basically taking things from your activity list, and then you're going to put them on in one of those four categories. So you got your zone of incompetence, the things that you're not very good at, the things that you really don't want to do. Then you have your zone of competence. These are the things that you're pretty good at. I would say I'm pretty competent making a cup of coffee. But if I was to work at a Starbucks to be a barista, that would fall in the zone of incompetence for me. The interesting thing is, when you have a zone of incompetence, much like anything we do initially, we may have the passion to do it, but not the training. You can move up from incompetence to competence to mastery or excellence and into your zone of genius. So the last two are zone of excellence. These are the things that you're very good at, could be something you're actually mastery at, but it's not necessarily the thing you would just crave to do and do it for free per se. Then you have the final zone, which is called the zone of genius. This is when you're in the flow. Think about zone of genius. You might think of from a basketball, Michael Jordan, or one of the great all-time football players or something like that. These are the people who have developed such mastery, such passion, such love. They're in their genius, and they're often recognized as what would be called the GOAT. And so that is ultimately our goal, to have most of our activities in the zone of excellence, or in the zone of genius. And there's something about when you're in those two zones, the creativity that dwells within us, the purpose that wells within us, it begins to be discovered, because we're going to be tapping into something we're going to be talking about in the next section. So what I want you to do, I want you to go through the activity list, complete it for a few days. Then what I want you to do is to begin to categorize in each of the zones. I want you to put those that are in zone of incompetence and be honest with yourself. This is just an exercise. What you're trying to do is step outside of yourself, document the things that you do every day. Most of it's habitual by nature. Then I want you to put it in those zones, zone of incompetence, zone of competence, zone of excellence, and zone of genius. Most of us are going to find, primarily because we don't know what our genius is, we're not tapped into that as of yet. So that's okay. That's fine if you're not in the zone of genius. You may be certain things, but the key to really being in the zone or finding where you're most passionate about, what brings you the most joy? And so it's almost as if, as I look around this room and I see things that are serving a purpose, there's multiple outlets in here, and you have certain things that are plugged into the outlet so that they would have power. And so when we think about our purpose and we're plugged into our purpose, we're in alignment with what we were created to be. And don't be in such a hurry, because sometimes this takes a long time. It took me quite a long time to figure out what my purpose is. And I've shared with many of you, my purpose is to help people find their purpose. Because if I am functioning in line with what the Creator created me to do, and you are doing that as well, and then we are paired together, puzzle piece to puzzle piece, what ends up happening is we are creating something in like magnifying in regards to what the ultimate purpose is as people come together. And I'm one of those individuals that believes God created us for a purpose, and in community, we can do so much more when we're working in alignment with what we're called to do. So when we're working out and putting in each of our zones, you begin to identify where you're at. And then what I want you to do is develop what is called an action plan. You want to move as many of those items from the zone of incompetence and the zone of competence, and you want to do several different things. First, you want to see, is this really important? Do I really need to do this? There are some situations where you can delegate those things. Certain things you don't even have to do. For example, for me, I am not an email person. It's not that I can't do it. I'm very competent in doing emails, but it's not something that I'm passionate about. So I've delegated my emails out. The other thing is, I am not an IT person. I'm fortunate. I have two children. Both of them are in IT, and they help me, because that would be in my zone of incompetence. Or I ask somebody who's very competent in those situations. So often we try to do things to save money or save time, to do the things that we're incompetent at, and assuming that we're competent because maybe we're proud or we just think we can do it. And we end up spending more time, more money. So it's very important that you're honest with yourself and you just identify the things that you're incompetent to. If they're a passion for you, then you can become competent by simply being mentored by somebody who has that skill, taking a class, because you move from incompetence to excellence to the zone of genius in areas that you are passionate about. So if I had a passion to begin to become an artist, I'm not very skilled at that. So I would put that as an incompetence. But let's say I wanted to be. I would learn from somebody who's already doing it. I would take classes that would just simply feed my passion. So very important, we categorize them. Then we develop an action plan, which I will provide a sheet for you, how to move from action to moving those things from those two areas into the zone of excellence, zone of genius.
Right back with more stories and insights to help you discover your calling and live with purpose. This is On Purpose with Paul Peters on Now Media Television. I'm Paul Peters, and you're watching On Purpose with Paul Peters on Now Media Television. Let's continue the journey towards your best life.
Welcome to On Purpose with Paul. I am Paul Peters, your host. We are here to talk to Amy Juneau, workplace consultant, and the owner and founder of House of Hire. Amy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks, Paul.
Tell us a little bit about how you came up with the name House of Hire.
Great question. So House of Hire was an idea that was sprouted out of, or came from a difficult period of time in my life. And so I was looking to take the higher road. And at that time, it really spurred on or inspired the name. And I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with that name. And over the course of time and taking a look and evaluating my skills and the direction I wanted my career to head in, having been a lifelong recruiter and workplace advisor, I decided to capitalize upon the hiring process and helping employers bring a higher level of engagement to their workplace, making higher level decisions and driving towards higher outcomes.
That's awesome. Just a little information. Amy and I met here in the studio, and I asked her to be my guest because after talking with Amy, she actually came to consult with my company, Covenant Case Management Services. So Amy, talk about and help the audience understand, what is it and why would somebody want to or need a workplace consultant?
Sure. Well, I think all of the buzz that's been happening in the news as it relates to, you know, Gen X versus Gen Y versus Gen Z versus millennials versus baby boomers, it's really been trying to understand and help individuals and companies understand how they can thrive in that space.
That's amazing. So what's some of the experience that you've had specifically with Covenant?
So, oh goodness.
It's okay, I can take it.
Some of the experiences that I've been able to see is that organizations that have experienced a tremendous amount of growth over the course of time can begin to lose track of their culture and their employee engagement. And that there's ways to be able to pull that back in, but specifically for owners and organizations that want culture and workplace engagement to be a priority.
Gotcha.
And so that's why it's been wonderful working with you, is that, you know, we've had the opportunity because you're invested in your staff and you're invested in your company and your people, and you understand that an engaged workforce only brings higher level things. And so it's been, I think, a really good fit.
So explain, because I've had the opportunity and different things that I've been involved in. Have you noticed a difference between the Generation Z, Generation X, the baby boomers in regards to applying and some of the things that you consult with in regards to some of your observations working with different companies?
For sure. Yeah. And you know, it kind of started back when I was early into the workplace out of college. So I'm considered to be an early millennial, right on the cusp of Gen X. And at that time, that was all anyone ever talked about. So I would imagine Gen Zs or Gen Ys, I'm confusing them all now, are feeling that same way. And I think that there's a lot of misnomers. I think there's a lot of assumptions. I think there's a lot of blanket statements that are made. And at the end of the day, it's individuals coming together and finding ways to be productive and drive outcomes. And it's okay that it doesn't fit one mold.
Gotcha. What would you advise in a situation where we've come off a COVID environment, people are now coming back to work? What do you think is the biggest need for owners as it relates to making sure the staff who are coming back into the office and really having a high level of culture where they feel honored and respected and appreciated?
Yeah. Good question and a complex answer, because there is no one size fits all as it relates to the way companies operate and what's going to drive their staff and their employees. Some businesses cannot operate in a remote environment. It's just not a reality, right? Trying to tell a judge that you're going to work remote today and that you don't want to come in and you're going to set your own hours. That's just not a reality. Same with the hospitality industry. But I think when we refine that down and we look at the industries where organizations are able to afford that kind of flexibility to their staff, mm-hmm. And it doesn't impact incomes or outcomes, if implemented correctly, that's where things really make a difference. And it's about defining those outcomes and focusing in on those versus who right, who's right or who's wrong, or what is the expected hours of operation versus not. If it has no impact on the bottom line and potentially drives the bottom line, if we lose some of those parameters around it, I think companies need to recognize that AI is coming into the workspace. It's been here for a while. It's not going away. I personally do not think it's a bad thing. But what's going to happen and what's happening today is that employers need to be focused in on workplace engagement and creating an environment where people are tied to their outcomes and tied to their work. And if you are in an industry where you have the ability to work remote or in person, let's find a way to make people-centric environments, because what's going to begin driving, in my opinion, the demand for talent is going to be, do I want to work there? Are the individuals that I'm targeting to hire, am I appealing to them? Because if I'm not, or if I tell them all of these things and I offer them and then they get there and it becomes a different reality, that's what's going to drive staff away. Mm-hmm. And so regardless of where unemployment rates are at, if you are not an attractive employer as defined by your staff, you're going to lose, gotcha. Unfortunately, because these are the people that are doing the work for us to be profitable.
Yeah. What would be your recommendation or advice for, because you've been working with my company, I think, since August, for companies that are having some struggles as people are moving back into the workforce from the remote environment? What would be like three recommendation suggestions that you would advise them on? This is what you need to do to make sure your staff feel appreciated and welcome back into this work environment.
Yeah. So first and foremost, let managers be managers again. Mm-hmm. Stop having the managing manager that is responsible for all the same outcomes that their staff is and more. Plus, they have to manage them and build trust and build rapport and not drop the ball and be perfect. We're setting our managers up for failure because we're not investing into their ability to lead and manage people effectively. Right? Look back at how people used to be onboarded 30 years ago. Very different than what we're doing today. And people stayed for a long time. And I think there's a correlation there. So I think invest into your managers and your leaders to actually be effective at leading and managing. I couldn't drive that home enough. Number two, sit down with your team and hear their feedback as to why they don't think a certain operating procedure or set of hours does or does not work for them, and put together a task force to dissect why that may be true or not true, and come together to build a partnership with your team.
Gotcha.
Right? It's a hard concept as a business owner and manager, I think, to come to terms with that. But if you want your people to stick, then let's find out what they want. And third is investing into AI. It is the way of the future. To destigmatize it and make sure people understand how it's driving value to the organization, and why it's driving everyone's lives forward from a productivity and outcome perspective.
Right back with more stories and insights to help you discover your calling and live with purpose. This is On Purpose with Paul Peters on Now Media Television. I'm Paul Peters, and you're watching On Purpose with Paul Peters on Now Media Television. Let's continue the journey towards your best life.
What would be your recommendation for companies that are looking at implementing AI and some of the fear, because mm-hmm. people are like, well, am I going to lose my job? Is AI going to take over? So what would be the benefits of implementing some AI into some of the companies in regards to, one, training,
yeah.
and two, how that frees them up to be more involved in connection with one another?
Yeah. So I do believe that AI is the catalyst to us returning back to a people-centric workplace, because the monotonous duties and responsibilities that we can now automate drives engagement, right? And allows time and space for people to learn how to connect again, for managers to lead again and build those relationships that they need to do effectively do that. But I think that it's beginning to slowly provide your team with tools that will make them more effective at their job. Mm-hmm. Learning how ChatGPT can help them send a more effective email, even if it's just the slight adjusting of the tone in terms of the way that it's received. So begin to train your staff on those things. Is AI going to take jobs? Well, yes, but so did cars. Mm-hmm. And so did air conditioning, and so have every other technological advances that have impacted the workspace since they existed, right? So I think it's creating a space where people understand what's okay and what's not okay, so that it creates that sense of psychological safety in the workspace for people to know that it's okay to be more efficient using that technology and that it's encouraged.
Gotcha.
So much more to go on that. I feel like I just scratched the surface.
So let's step back a little bit. I want you to talk to the audience about the decision that you made to start your own company. I've had my company for now 15 years. I was an entrepreneur. I had my paper route when I was 7 to do a thing. So it's kind of in my blood. Yeah. And when people are taking that step to be their own boss per se and start their own company. So talk about what was the key part of making that decision, and then what do you see in the future for you?
Yeah, so I was in a really unique situation where I was able to take a little bit of time off of work because the company that I was working for had been acquired. So it gave me a little bit of breathing room and space to figure out what my next move was. And when I was ready to make my next move, I wasn't able to, very frustratingly to me. So I had set up this website. I had the name of this company. I had all of this energy that I was ready to invest back into my career, but I couldn't go to an employer and say, you know, in my first 90 days on the job, I have 14 days that I'm not going to be available. Mm-hmm. So I found myself to be very crippled by the fact that I wasn't able to throw myself back into the job market the way that I wanted to. Mm-hmm. So I started pouring into building out my website and doing a little bit more research, and had the opportunity to come and interview with Jeff and meet you. Yeah. And really what was an area that was very painful for me to, you know, that was holding me back, I found a way to allow it to elevate me to a higher level. And that led me to starting the business.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Because when we met, and like she said, she had been interviewed by Jeff, and then Jeff, what he does here is people who are on the different shows, he has them go around and introduce themselves to each other. And I want you to kind of talk, because the show is called On Purpose with Paul. Mm-hmm. And you have an extensive background history working in HR. Mm-hmm. You made the decision to start your own company. From that, how have you kind of discovered in regards to applying and learning your purpose?
Yeah. So, good question. I have learned that, and I'm still continuing to learn, that a lot of the times the things that we feel are the worst case scenarios, things don't go the way that we planned or expected, can be a source of pain, mm-hmm. hardship, suffering, that it guides you down the path that you're supposed to be and or your purpose. Something I learned recently is that in Hebrew, the word for purpose is work. They're not two separate words mm-hmm. for them or in the language. It's one word. Mm-hmm. And so for me, you know, my purpose has been born out of a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful for that at this stage in my life. And I'm so thankful that diving into a business, launching of a business that it was a lifelong dream, but to be honest, I don't know that I would have ever had it in me to quit my job to start a new company. That would have felt illogical to me. And so it's kind of funny how the pain that was so excruciating at the time guided me to and led me to start my business, which I believe is ultimately leading to the purpose, which I find tremendous purpose in the work that I'm doing. And I am finding that all of the workplace experience that I had building up to where we are today has very effectively equipped me to be a consultant in the space that I thrive in.
Yeah.
Right? When I talk about my business, I glow. And when I talk about the outcomes that I want to achieve, I glow.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of funny how the fear and trepidation that I initially felt and kind of felt like I was being forced into something actually guided me to my purpose.
Yeah. It's interesting because, and I appreciate everything you said, when we are trying to discover our purpose, it really originates out of the passion, the glow that we feel, and then being able to do that to serve other people. So what do you see for you, for your vision, what you want to see House of Hire become? Because I have benefited as a business owner, you're consulting, you're working with my team and some of the things that you poured in and helped us to see. What do you see for House of Hire in regards to the future for you?
Yeah, well, I see the organization growing. Mm-hmm. I've recently brought on a partner who is, you know, getting well-versed with what it is that we do and becoming more familiar with the Happy Hire method. And us being able to bring really distinct and defined processes that benefit other organizations to thrive.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, I want to have two specialized arms of the business, one that's going to focus in on workplace consulting, the other one that's going to focus in on hiring the right people to drive engagement and purpose within these respective organizations. And grow.
I want to point out something I think is very interesting, because you made the decision, or through the company that you worked for, they basically sold out, or what was the term you used?
They were acquired,
mm-hmm. which freed you up to make a decision
mm-hmm.
to start House of Hire. That decision, how did you get involved in being interviewed by Jeff?
So networking.
Okay.
Plain and simple, when I was first getting myself launched, I was really wanting to not embark upon growing my business through making phone calls. Done a lot of that in my career, and would consider that to be disengaging at this point in time.
Yeah.
So I was trying to find ways to effectively grow my business through creating meaningful connections.
Gotcha.
And so I had gone to a networking event where I was connected in with someone who had recently been interviewed, and they thought it was a good idea to pass my information along to Jeff. So it was just the power of the human connection, which is ironically what AI is, I believe, going to bring back into the workspace.
That's amazing. Well, it's interesting because when we make choices and things, there's a term I like to use, providence. Mm-hmm. So you made the decision to start your own company. You then, through networking, came to come here to be interviewed by Jeff on the very day that I'm here, which of course—
In this studio,
and of course we met. So I have one last question for you. I think everyone wants to know. And the question is, will you marry me?
Yes. Nothing would make me happier. I love you.
Thank you.
Oh, wow.
So, everybody, I'm not saying that you have to come to Jeff Curley's TV show to meet your soulmate.
Plug for Jeff.
But sometimes you have to make decisions, and that is to go forward. And providentially, sometimes you will meet the very person you're going to ask to marry you. And that's my story, our story. Yeah. So, Amy Juno, thank you so much. I love you.
I love you.
So thank you so much for joining us for On Purpose with Paul and my wonderful guest and now my fiance, Amy Juno. Thank you so much. Have a great evening.